On this segment of the comment program, we're going to go ahead and get started talking about birds in the park. And Susan Cook from the National Park Service is with us. Susan, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I am good. Hey, you know, I don't think I've talked to you since you got your official appointment as the head muckety-muck of the stuff you do over there. So congratulations.
Well, thank you very much.
Good to see you here, and glad you got that appointment.
I'm very honored to have it, too.
And who did you bring with you today?
I brought Nadine Salas. She is an ACE intern, so American Conservation Experience.
Okay.
So she comes to us from California. She's been a huge asset. She's been with us almost 3 months.
Yeah,
so
3 months.
Oh,
now.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay. So are you here through the summer then, or are you going to wrap up pretty quick?
I'm wrapping up pretty quick. Unfortunately, I'll be leaving June 4th, which is going to be pretty soon.
You can't get an extension in there so you can stay for the summer months?
I definitely have plans on coming back. I love Valentine. I love the area.
Cool.
And I love the National Park Service. So I've been having a great time, and we're really excited to be able to introduce this event that I'm really happy to help program with the National Park Service and Cook and Susan.
Well, let's talk about this. Birds in the park. First of all, tell us a little bit about the migratory birds. And of course, we're familiar with birds. Sometimes we overlook them because they're flying overhead all the time and we ignore them. We don't pay attention to them like we probably should. But tell us a little bit about how this all came about and what we're going to be doing.
Yeah, so right now we're just starting off the season of migratory birding. So World Migratory Bird Day actually just passed us this past Saturday. But it's not the only day in which we're celebrating migratory birds. It's actually just to start off the season. So we're recognizing it from now until October is our second World Migratory Bird Day. And really, we want to bring awareness to a lot of the challenges that migratory birds in this area and around the globe face during their migration. This year's theme has been Dim the Lights for Birds in Flight, which is really an emphasis on how light pollution affects our migratory birds, and it's just intersectional to a lot of the wildlife in the area. It's really small but very impactful actions that our community can take, like turning your porch lights off before you go to bed, closing your blinds at night, or even choosing motion-sensored lighting. All of those have huge impacts that we might not be able to see directly, but will affect the migratory patterns of birds for up to thousands of miles.
So how does that work? How do the lights affect the birds' migration? I mean, they're not looking at like running lights and going, oh, well, I go to this porch light and then that porch light. So how does that affect them?
Yeah, you'd actually be really surprised. So there are some birds who get so attracted to lighting that they'll circle around lights until they're absolutely exhausted and fall to the ground, which makes them more susceptible to predation, right? Like they're more likely to not be on their normal migratory path because they're so tired, or they might even just have some kind of fatal accident. There's a lot of instances where birds, they can't see window panes, so they'll just crash in.
Right.
So a lot of us have had this experience, and it's really unfortunate, but there's, you know, not a lot of ability for them to differentiate. The largest one that I found was the most interesting is we think migration is innate, like it's intuitive. Part of it's true. The other part is that there's environmental cues that they rely on. So the big four are solar, lunar, celestial, and magnetic. And so here, when we're talking about light pollution, the lunar and the celestial are really important. The darker the sky, they're more able to pick up on those subtle cues. Mm. And so when we talk about that, lunar is being able to see the lunar phase. Celestial, being able to actually become aware of the patterns inside of the cosmos to dictate where they're going as far as their migration pattern or if they're even on track.
Hmm.
So they're really subtle cues. And lighting, especially in the urban areas, there's a bit more challenges there. But even out here in our rural communities, we do a really great job. We have a really great space that we're in, but we want to make sure that we're still continuing a really healthy, bird-friendly practice.
We've talked about the dark skies when it comes to looking at the stars and the moon and the planets and all those kind of things. When the star party comes into town and everything, and we've been working on some things there. But I guess I never realized that it affected migration to birds and stuff, too. So here's one for
it
you.
It also affects mammals because it affects reproduction. Mm-hmm. So if there's too much light around.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense, I guess. So when I think of migratory birds, or a lot of people think of migratory birds, you're thinking of geese and swans and all of those. You know, the doves migrate, but I noticed the yellow finches are back at my bird feeder, so apparently they're working their way back somewhere, I guess. So where do yellow finches and those kind of things go for the summer months?
Yeah, that's actually a really good question. I'm not as familiar with this area. So, right, I'm from California. I have that background. I'm still learning a lot. There's a new set of birds that I get to interact with. But it's part of my research. I'm happy that I get to learn this information. I wish I could give you the right answer, but I don't want to say anything wrong on the air, especially.
And most of our migration heads down towards Texas.
Sure.
From this area. But also, a year ago, I saw two whooping cranes. There's only 300 left in the wild. And our natural resource manager saw them on the East River. And then like 3 or 4 days later, I saw them in the Valentine Refuge. So they were heading through, which is really cool to see them.
Yeah, when there's only that many left out there. So let's talk about
how many are flying. Oh. How many birds do you think are flying overnight in this area?
How many birds go over our area during the night?
Yes.
I have no idea. I probably way more than what we think.
Make a guess, and then Nadine will tell you the answer.
Okay, let's say.
And how to find out.
5,000.
A little higher. You can get one more guess.
10,000.
Not quite. So we actually have thermal and satellite ability to track the migration record every night. And in Cherry County alone, there's about 1 million birds per night that are migrating in this area.
Wow.
Through satellite
amazing?
Tracking. Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of stuff going on up there. So what altitude do they at? Okay, so now you got me curious about, do birds migrate at different altitudes? Do little birds go lower and big birds go higher? Or is there a
control.
Pattern to what they do?
Some traffic control, right? The reservation
system.
Yeah,
who runs that program anyway?
They're definitely depending. The species of birds tend to prefer, you can actually be able to identify birding and nesting based on where they're at, not so much the skies, but sometimes in the canopies, there are birds who like to ground nest. There's also species of birds who prefer riverside or lakeside areas. So it's not so much as far as altitude that varies. Of course, the strength and the size of bird really plays into that, right? The ability for them to be able to fly, or some of them actually glide and coast through the air currents because they're larger and they're not actually resorting to their wingspan. It's more of their ability to flow through that airway. But there's a lot of really interesting information out there. And that's kind of what we're actually focusing on with this birding event. So Birds in the Park is happening on May 24th in Valentine City Park at the Girl Scout Hut. And we're having a local birding legend, James Ducey.
A legend? Boy, that might be. Don't swell his head up now a little bit. It's Jim. Come on.
It's Jim, right? He's been renowned for his authorings of some of our Nebraska birds. And he's been published in the Nebraska Bird Review, Nebraska Land, Nebraska Fence Post. He's just a wealth of information and knowledge. And he's going to be going and diving deeper into some of the subjects that, unfortunately, I wish we'd be able to answer today. But if you come to our event, you would get that and more. We're really excited about that.
I was going to say, he has some books that I think he's going to give away to the first 40 people that show up or something like that. He's going to give them a free copy. Which book was it? I can't remember.
Yeah, it's so he's...
Is that the Nebraska Birds one?
Yes, courtesy of James Ducey. Okay. We are... he is giving away 40 copies to the first 40 attendees of Birds of the Untamed West, and also raffling off a field guide to nesting, to bird nest. So,
how to recognize bird nests?
Yes, how to recognize bird nests.
So this is on the 24th, so a week from tomorrow evening, and it's going to be in the city park. And you said, I thought it was at the pavilion area, but is it at the Girl Scout cabin back around that area? Girl Scout cabin. Okay. All right. I thought I seen somewhere in the press release that it was going to be over at the pavilion area. Well, you'll find it anyway. Just go to where all the people are at. So, so then you're going to be assisting with this, and Susan will be bystanding. Is that the deal?
I'm going to hang out in the audience. She's done a great job. I don't have to. I just get to enjoy.
Can you be the heckler or the person that comes up with weird questions? That
I'm not going
to
do that.
You're going to try to stump her a little bit on some of the questions there before she leaves. So, no, don't make her feel bad.
But, no.
All right. So what kind of things have you been doing while you've been here in Valentine for the last few months?
So I originally came here. So I am originally from California, and then I moved to Texas for about 2 years. So I got my first taste of the South and the Midwest a little bit, then moved to Oklahoma for a while and found my way up here into Nebraska. I found a part of this community that I do not think I'll be able to replicate when I go back to Texas or California, which is the conversations that you're able to have with people. People are so friendly out here. I can have a conversation with someone from the grocery store when I'm buying groceries or at the gas station about the weather.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd be surprised, especially in the more urban areas, that just doesn't happen. There's less interaction. There's less socialization, I feel like. So there's not as much for me to do besides get to really know my community, but I think that's probably been something that I've been lacking for a really long part of my life. So I've been getting to know the community, talking to as many people as I can, mostly at IGA. that's only where I get to.
Your social outlet is IGA and Baumgars, probably.
Yeah, absolutely. But you know what? I'm not knocking it at all. And in my free time, it's being around the river, hiking at the refuge, those kinds of things, and being able to hopefully create a community for me to go back to.
It's interesting that you say that, because we had a couple of rural fellows here last year, and Connor was from Lincoln, and he said, and he'd graduated from UNL down there and was doing a 10-week internship here. I don't know if you met Connor and Victor last year, didn't you,
yes.
Susan? Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, because you ran on someone.
Yeah.
And he said the same thing about down there, you'd make an appointment with the business owner to go talk to him about, you know, whatever it might be, and you'd have like 10 or 15 minutes, and bam, you know, if that, you're done. And he said, here, I'd go talk to a business owner, and I'd spend a half an hour, 45 minutes talking about all kinds of stuff in there, and meet somebody on the way to the next deal and stop and visit with them about things. So I guess that's good that you get a chance to kind of really experience the community. So sounds to me like you're kind of hooked and you'll have to come back and get a job with the Park Service.
Back.
Okay.
Yep.
Good deal.
We're working on that.
Good.
A lot of what she'd done and what she found that she really had a passion for that didn't know was the education programs about environment. She's been doing a lot of programming. And then also doing a lot of planning with us on what will we be doing this summer and actually what she can do when she comes back.
Yeah. So I've been inspired for a career in teaching through my internship, which I didn't know. I have a degree in public administration from the California State University of Chico. And that's a fancy word for HR, basically.
Oh, okay.
I got an HR degree. And I had the opportunity to work with a lot of our youth here in Valentine from the different school districts, even in Sparks, after school nature clubs, being able to talk about water usage, fossils and paleontology. And it was something that came really naturally, but I also had a super great support system and mentoring from the Park Service. And so now I'm very sure I want to go into teaching during my off seasons and have that be a focus of my career at the National Park Service.
Cool. So, Susan, when are you going to get her back?
Fall.
Fall. Won't be until fall then.
Yeah.
Wow, that's kind of a bummer that you missed the summer season. So.
Well, and that's what she extended her stay for. To her last day should have been a little bit sooner, but she's going to work June 4th for our Family Outdoor Fun Day.
So you can't just lose her paperwork somewhere and keep her around for...
I offered, but she already has a contract to work at Rocky Mountain National Park.
Yeah, so the great part about ACE, okay. I'll get a little plug-in really quickly. American Conservation Experience takes adults from 18 to 35 and introduces them to hands-on experience in conservation work.
Mm-hmm.
So I had the opportunity of doing this internship here at the Niobrara National Scenic River and then going another 3 months to Rocky Mountain National Park and doing river district management. And it's part of thousands of opportunities around the U.S., not just the National Park Service, but also U.S. Fish and Wildlife, Bureau of Land Management. There's even fire training for wildland fires, Forest mm-hmm. Service. So across the land management agencies, there's internships in every division that you can ask for. It's a really, really great program.
Pretty good variety, it
the
sounds like.
The program that she is in, the academy that she's in, they had 500 or how?
Yes, so I'm part of the National Park Service Academy. It's Academy Cohort that happens one time a year. There was over 500 applicants, 60 interviews, and 19 chosen. And the focus is to diversify the workplace. So choosing individuals who come from a diverse background and who aren't as visible inside of the workforce and creating an opportunity for them to have more exposure to what the National Park Service has to offer. So I'm one of the great 19 of the National Park Service Academy.
I mean, that's amazing, from over 500 to 19, and she's one of them.
So did you pick coming to Valentine, or did Susan put in an application and say, we'll host somebody, or how did that work?
Yeah, we fund it, basically. We wanted an intern with them because everyone we've ever had, they're amazing. And so we knew we wanted one, and then they gave us a grouping of applicants. We had to pick one, and we picked Nadine.
Cool. Well, that's nice. Well, so we'll be looking forward to seeing you back here in the fall. Maybe we can get you to come on and talk about what your experience was at Rocky Mountain National Park and get back into the groove of things. But before I let you go today, let's go back and recap what we're doing. Birds in the Park, celebrating the migratory birds and the dark skies. And that's the 24th, and it's going to be in the Valentine City Park starting at 5:30. So an hour, hour and a half, something like that. Are you thinking for a program?
Yeah, about an hour, hour and a half. It's a really casual, kind of loose time set, really to introduce people, get the raffle going, talk about the books a bit, and then as we see the influx of traffic, we'll just go ahead and start. It's more of a conversation-based program. So we're hoping for a really casual environment. We're also encouraging anyone who's coming to bring their own personal picnic gear or even hiking gear for an opportunity for you to go ahead and bird on your own afterwards.
So I was going to say, so are you going to send them out along the trails and let them check out some of the birds?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. That's the plan.
Yeah, encouraging them to explore. Our city park is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Explore this outdoor area and kind of take what they've learned and go with it so they can have their picnic before or after and hike or not hike.
I think this area has become more and more known for birding because of, you know, the park and those kind of things. Mm-hmm. But then you have the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the refuges that are bird refuges primarily. So there's a lot of opportunities for people to get out on public land. And yeah. I think most of the time, even private landowners are pretty open about letting people come in and stroll down the riverbanks or whatever to look at birds. So kind of a nice opportunity to get out and do that. And it's also an economic thing for some areas in ecotourism as well.
Yes.
So, all right. Well, and what else do we need to tell people about this? Jim Ducey will be the main speaker, and a lot of questions and answers, I would think, for Jim.
Within the migratory bird programming, we have posters to give out. There's other things for kids to get. You know, so there's some bling that goes with the program that they sent us to use.
Yeah, so, very family friendly. We have some stickers, some wristbands to give out, a lot of posters.
Sounds like it would be good for adults, but also for what age bracket would you kind of cut it off at as far as if you were going to look at it and say, well, you know, anybody below this age probably isn't going to get a lot out of this program?
I wouldn't say there is a cutoff because toddlers can sit and listen and hang out with mom and the rest of the family. So I'd say it's complete family friendly from little to adult.
And if nothing else, they'll go play on the playground.
I'm bringing my 91-year-old mother.
So. Yeah.
Because she wants to learn more.
All right. Well, what else do we need to remind people about on this Birds in the Park?
Definitely keep in touch with our Facebook and our Instagram. We're going to be posting more information. And if you just forget after this radio, then go ahead and take a look there.
They might want to bring bug spray and maybe bring lawn chairs, too.
Oh, there are no bugs yet, are there?
Yes.
If we had more birds, we'd get rid of more bugs, wouldn't we?
There you go.
Here's a question. I'm going to ask this, and hopefully that my wife is listening, because she says, I just don't think there's as many birds as there used to be. It seems like you don't have as many birds around the yard and the garden and those kind of things. Is there anything to that?
What I can tell is when we were doing our canoe training, I think last year or the year before with our staff, because we train everybody over on Mill Lake, and we had a gentleman who was retired from the Fish and Wildlife Service from like 30 years ago. And he said, if you think there's a lot of birds now, he said, this is nothing compared to what it was when I worked here. And he started speaking of the number of nests that they were monitoring compared to what they monitor now. And there were, I don't remember the numbers, but it was astronomical difference.
Was that Lynn?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, you can talk to Lynn about the birds at the refuge all day long out there. So,
Well, he doesn't work there now.
He retired several years
ago.
I just wondered if there's been any studies that show that we're losing songbirds or whatever, and why.
Oh.
I mean, is it pesticides? Is it BB
predator
guns?
Cats?
I don't know. Household cats? And I know I was watching a big old tomcat down on the creek by me west of town last night, and he was hunting a little pile of some dead cedar trees thinking rabbits and birds, I'm sure, are what he was looking for down there. But anyway, all right, so this is great. Nadine, it was great to get a chance to meet you. Sorry it's so late in your tenure here. It would have been nice to have you come in a little bit earlier. So Susan, that's a hint, next time
when
she's back, bring her back in there.
Okay.
And if you want to, I'd have to look at my calendar, But like maybe next Monday on the program, just give us a quick phone call or something and a shout out and a reminder about this to people. And we'll put together a news story to remind people about it as well. So
perfect.
So we'll try to get the word out for you.
Thank you. We appreciate that.
Susan, anything else with the Park Service? You're about to get to the busy season here.
We are. Yeah, it's been quite busy. We have the new posters. If any business in town, two summers ago, we got a lot of complaints of people trespassing or people not portaging when they should and people, you know, tipping and losing stuff. So we spent that winter kind of creating what we had 102,000 people here pretty much between Memorial Weekend and Labor Day weekend. After I was running some of our numbers recently, and we averaged between 30 to 35,000 people for the month of July for like the last 8 years. And with COVID, so we started, a lot of these people are not using an outfitter, they're not finding the park service. So how do we get them the information so they understand the difference between public landings, private landings, what land they can be on, what land they should stay off of, where to portage, the rapids that we do have that, you know, people are trying to run Rocky Ford all the time. Not a good idea.
Not unless you're experienced.
Yeah. So anyway, we put together two posters. One is called Caring for the Niobrara River. It has all the rapids labeled and what number they are so people know. It has the float times from various places. And then it has public landings, private landings. So a lot of information. And then we have the Know Before You Go. It's things that people should be thinking about before they actually hit the river. So we're trying to, we got them out around the community, especially we were, I'm like tongue-tied today. But we started looking at where are these visitors. If they're not coming to an outfitter or to us, where are they? They're at hotels, they're at campgrounds, they're at restaurants, they're at gas stations, and trying to get those posters out. It worked. We had zero complaints last summer. So we want to do the same thing. So we're going to be sending around, but if any business owners or people that have a place to, they're 11 by 17, so not huge, we'll print them and laminate them and get them out. The goal is for people to have a safe float. We don't want people trespassing where they don't belong. So it's just trying to get the information out so everybody has a great experience.
Okay. Do you have like a QR code on them or anything where they can just take their phone and click it and get all that information, or do they just need to go to the Facebook page? And
It's all back on our website too.
Okay.
But it doesn't have a QR code on it.
Okay. Well, gee, what's going on? I thought QR codes were everywhere. Anyway, all right. Well, Susan, Nadine, thanks for coming in today. And we'll get to see you back in here. And hopefully we'll get a bunch of people down there next Tuesday night to learn more about the migratory birds and the dark skies and all of that.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thanks for coming in. And again, we've been visiting with National Park Service representatives on this segment of the KVSA.